Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
The system is down.
Does music even sound like that anymore? No. I feel like it doesn't. Well, I can't do like pentatonic. I can't.
Josh, you are the newest member of the Pentatonix. I want to be that guy from Beverly Hills Cop.
Police Academy, not Beverly Hills.
That guy was great. Hey, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And today we have a special episode. It's not specifically Commander-related, but we have a couple of friends on that we're going to bring on soon to talk some stories. Have some opinions
like
about some things.
It's story power hour.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, probably a lot of pontificating.
I guess it's going to be us talking heartfelt about some things that we believe in and the state of the
We're just going to be hanging out.
Yeah, we're hanging out. It's the state of the union with EDH players. Before we get into that, I have a couple of announcements, of course. We're on YouTube. We've uploaded all of our podcast videos to YouTube. We respond to comments there as well as on the Rocket Jump page. If you guys want to subscribe to us, please do. Our videos take a long time to make, and they are very useful.
In fact, our videos have recently been upgraded. I did a bunch of cool animations, and then we found this guy named Jeffrey Palmer, and his Twitter handle is @livingcardsmtg, and he has done some awesome card animations, even more intricate than what I was doing, and so we have those in our video. If you haven't gone over to YouTube to check out the videos, at least watch one. One, because we put a lot of work into it, but two, it looks really cool. There's a lot of stuff. I mean, it's not just like stills. We actually have like the images moving. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been animated. It's really cool stuff, and you get to see all the cards as we're talking about them. It does make it easier to digest. Yeah.
If you stick it on a second monitor, it's almost like an extravagant Magic the Gathering backgrounds.
Screensaver,
yeah. That's going on. But thanks to Jeffrey for doing some of the extra card animations. You may have seen some of his stuff on the Magic subreddit. They're really, really, really cool.
Yeah, the guy's got skills.
Yeah. Also, we're running a new contest. We're giving away some prizes. Courtesy of a fan that we met in GP Vegas, Alex Newman at Alexander Noom. Alexandy Noom. We'll put it in the description below.
Oh, it's Alexander Newm.
Newm, that's right. Yeah. He writes articles on mtgbrodeals.com, and he provided us with Packs of the Dark, which is an old set, and it's a very valuable one,
too. It was like the fourth or fifth Magic set, not counting Alpha Beta. I think it went Antiquities, Legend, no,
Arabian Nights,
Antiquities, Legends, The Dark.
That's right, The Dark, yeah.
Yeah, so there are some cool stuff in there.
The original Blood Moon is in there,
yep,
Josh.
The very first Blood Moon, so screw that.
Maze of Ith and Ball Lightning. Preacher, Goblin Wizard, Tormod's Crypt. A lot of sort of the original cards.
Elves of Deep Shadow is a good one that's in there. There's a lot of really cool stuff.
These packs are very valuable, and super huge thanks to Alex for giving these for us to give away. And the contest is simple.
Very simple. So here's what we're going to do. We want you to enter. What you do is you send in your deck list. So your EDH deck, you need to go to tappedout.net and put in the deck list there and then email it to us. And then what we want you to do...
Or tweet it at us.
You could tweet it at us, too. What you want you to do is... We want it to be a deck that you're having trouble with. If it's fine-tuned and it's perfect, then we can't help you much.
Yeah.
But we're going to review... We're going to choose decks to review on the show. So we want you to do the deck list, send it to us, and explain what problems you're having or maybe what you're not sure about. And
or
then,
what you're trying to do with it. Yeah. And maybe what you haven't been successful with.
Any information you think we might need, what your meta's like, maybe there's a problem deck in your meta and you're trying to combat that, anything that you think is relevant, and then we will choose, over the coming weeks and months, we'll choose a few of these, and we'll do a review of your deck on the show and try and help you improve or tune it. And then those people chosen will win a pack of the dark.
Along with some other... fun prizes. We always throw in some like random foils and stuff.
You always just win extra stuff because Jimmy's awesome.
I just have some stuff to give away. Yeah. So we're essentially doing sort of more extravagant deck techs where we're helping you finalize your deck or find out what that missing piece is. And we'll try and throw in some level up moments in there as well. Hey, we wanted to do this because this is a political thing that we always do, and we think that this card really helps, you know, contribute to that and what you're trying to do with the deck, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and also the great thing is we've got a comment section on Rocket Jump on our YouTube page. it can start discussion among other people who listen to the show, and that can really give you a lot of information, a lot of help too. So,
yeah. So super easy. Email us at commandcast@rocketjump.com or tweet at us at commandcast with the deck list that you made on tappedout.net. It's really easy to do. All you have to do is just type out the card names in no particular order. And send it in and tell us, give us as much information as possible. That's why we recommend you email it. And we'll hopefully pick one of your decks and you will win some sweet prizes.
All right, let's introduce our guests.
And our very special guest today for a very fun episode, we've got Wedge from the Menasaurus and the professor from Tolarian Community College. Welcome to the show, friends.
Oh, hello. Pleasure to be here.
So exciting. We've never had a double guest in different parts of the world before. This is very exciting.
This is our first three-way.
off to a good start, Josh.
First three-way Skype.
Skype call.
Wait, then who's at three? Then who's not participating? Who am I missing out on?
Oh,
who didn't get to sample?
If you don't know who's being left out, then you're the one that's being
left out. Oh, yeah, that's probably true. Josh and I are Skyping from the same account, so I guess that we count as one.
I messed that up on so many levels. Sorry.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, if you guys don't know, Professor Josh and I did get to go to GP Vegas last week, but Wedge, unfortunately, was at home, and it was a sad, sad time because we wanted to hang out with Wedge badly, and we would love to have been able to have you there at the event. So this episode is here to catch you up. We're going to share some of our favorite stories and just hang out and talk about what happened and also what you saw from Twitter and Twitch the entire weekend, because I'd love to see what your perspective was on the whole event from a different sort of place. And you also got to watch GP Chiba and Utrecht at the same time, which is crazy.
Oh, it was around the clock coverage. There's a lot to talk about, put it that way.
That's interesting because Wedge, you probably know a lot more about what's actually happened in the tournaments than we do. I don't know about you, Professor, but Jimmy and I, like, because we're busy running around meeting with people playing in it. Like, I only know a little bit about what happened, like, actually with the players in the tournament.
I haven't yet had a chance to catch up on the other two GPs, other than the fact that I heard that it was rather funny with the earthquake, that everybody kept a cool head.
Oh,
the commentaries, like, it was on stream. I'd really love to watch it, and I heard that the commentators were really cool about it, kept everybody calm, they cracked a joke about red mana players, and that the GP went on, you know, nice and smooth, which I'm glad to hear. But I don't know the winning decks who won. I literally haven't had a chance to sit down and catch up on all the coverage from the other GPs.
That is insane. An earthquake happened and everyone's like, oh, yep, earthquake. We'll get back to playing.
And I tap my island.
Yeah.
as a good Magic player should be doing.
Just island. actually, last year when I was in Japan, we were in a building and all the buildings there are meant to shake because when they shake, it actually makes it safer because they're not rigid, so they won't break until an earthquake hit. And we were on the top floor and we were just like, whoa.
You'll sway for a while after the earthquake. Yeah.
And we went downstairs and there was no one like screaming Bloody Mary. Everyone was just, I'm not just eating breakfast, whatever. And I was like, wow, this must be enough of a common occurrence, because when it happened in New York, were you there for the earthquake of New York like 2 years ago, Wedge?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, like, people were freaking out, right?
Yeah, it was like end of the world, Armageddon. The thing about New York is we're so used to weird weather and like insanely bad. Like, we get terrible nor'easters and like hurricanes. That everyone freaked out for that. Nothing else, but just, I mean, we're talking like hide under tables, like nuclear disaster.
It was
hilarious, honestly.
Wow.
In retrospect, it was hilarious.
That's insane. Yeah.
Yeah, you do get used to it. I was in Los Angeles during the Northridge quake, and there were so many. Well, that was when I was a kid, but it was a big one, and there were so many aftershocks. It was unreal, and it got to a point where we would wait a sec before running to the doorway. Like, at first it was always run to the doorway. That's the safest part of the house. But after a while, it's just like, is this going to be a big one? If not, I'm not moving.
Yeah.
You know, you just get used to it. So I can imagine in a place like Japan, they're just like,
just, you know, another day.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And it's bad. Don't do this, people. But yeah, if it starts shaking and I'm in bed, I'm just like, no, I think I'm good. I'm just staying in bed.
Is it getting worse?
I'm good. It was okay.
I think all right. Yeah. Also, I like how it's like, go into a doorway. Why isn't it get the heck outside? Like, get out of the thing.
Well,
that
you
might
want
fall
the most, because you can't make it outside of it.
True.
Always,
true.
Yeah.
Maybe
so you want the most stable area in the house.
Well, fortunately, Vegas did not shake, but we did shake some dice and roll them across the table. I guess that was the closest we got to a rolling
great
earthquake.
Segue.
You know what I mean?
We did eat like a ton of awesome dinners is what we really
did. That's right. And Wedge, that's, I mean, perhaps next time we owe you a steak. That's where the comes
like
from.
Like a really
that,
good
that,
steak.
That is
good.
Most of the stories that the professor told me was like, I went to dinner and then I went to dinner and then I went to dinner.
And yeah, so
like,
and then 80%. I went to bed while they went off and gambled and played magic.
Yeah.
We had some amazing meals though, Wedge. That was definitely a highlight. I think, Professor, we had dinner with you like every night except one, I think.
Yeah, it was great. Well, it's especially good because, Josh, you seem to know Las Vegas very well.
Indeed.
Yeah, I know it way too well.
And I could not find a good place to eat for the life of me. I'd made all the wrong choices when I was on my own for like breakfast or whatever, but... Oh, those were great meals. Those were some really great meals. That steak in particular, just marble veined and aged in house, and ordered a nice bottle of Tempranillo.
Wedge is just like dying.
It was
right
he
now.
Got we got we all got the bone in ribeye Wedge. We went to Delmonico's steakhouse in the Venetian. It's one of Emeril Lagasse's restaurants.
I didn't know it's Emeril's.
Yeah, and the bone in ribeye there is like, what was that? Like, what was that? Like 16 ounces or so?
It was a big steak.
It was a big steak. It was marbleized really well. It's one of the best steaks in Vegas. I mean, a lot of people will say cut, which is about twice as expensive, and I think probably only 5% better. So for my money, Delmonico's, if you're ever in Vegas, that's where everybody should eat.
True.
Well, you need reservations though, right?
Oh, yeah. I'd made those reservations like a week out because I knew.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I mean, I think actually all three of us seem to be in the best places for food in the U.S., I would argue. San Fran, L.A., and New York are all.
Right.
Yeah, those are probably the three best.
Yeah.
I mean, probably. Sorry.
You
can
maybe
we're probably
you can say like Miami
you know what?
Or something.
You got to put Narlands on there.
Narlands?
Narlands has crazy good food. It's a different type.
Yeah. It's Cajun. It's gumbo. It's
so good.
Yeah.
I've never been to New Orleans or Miami or Chicago, but I'd put my money on Chicago out of the three for better cuisine.
Oh,
I don't
really?
Know why. Yeah, dude. I don't know why. I just feel like, I don't know. Doesn't Chicago have some...
I know nothing about Chicago cuisine.
I know they have that giant reflective egg thing, and that's it.
That's it? It's like a... It's a metropolis.
It is giant, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to have some good food in it somewhere.
Okay, but just, Prof, when you go to... Narlands, don't call it New Orleans when you go there.
Narlands.
I gotta call it Narlands.
Narlands. Just don't call it New Orleans there because, well, that's not what they call it. It's like people who say Oregon.
I watched the whole first season of Treme. Does that count as a trip?
That's actually pretty. You're probably better versed in that city. I mean, feel like I know Baltimore because I watched The Wire.
Said Baltimore, I was like, he's going to say The Wire.
He's going to say The Wire. Yeah, it has to be.
The Wire's so good.
Excuse me, but I know something about Baltimore. I watched The Wire. I practically grew up in Baltimore as a result.
Okay, listen.
Do people like
you just did that about Narlands?
Narlands,
Narlands.
I watched The Godfather 2 before I went to Vegas. I'm well versed.
I got to tell you a story, Wedge.
I love stories.
Yeah, this is the story of the whole trip
for
me.
Gosh, this isn't the one with me, right?
Yes, yeah, it is the one with you.
Oh,
so,
oh my God, I'm so ready.
Embarrassing.
Yeah, I was going to like wait till later, but this is just, you'll get me back. How do you get me back? This wasn't set up.
He'll find a way.
This actually happened. There's no getting back. Okay, so we are in the convention center. It's Sunday. We're just talking. I think Jimmy had walked away to watch MTGO Doc.
Mm-hmm. I was watching Doc.
Gabe's... Because I think Jimmy, you were knocked out at that point. I think it was round 8 or 9.
Yeah. And he had to win both of his last matches to get in, I think.
Yeah, he was winning in. And I think that you had walked away for a second. And so we were just chatting. It was me, Prof, our friend Vincent, mm-hmm. our buddy Brian Tran, who works at Twitch. And we're chatting. And we're just sort of waiting for Jimmy to finish up. And this kid walks up. And I say kid. He's probably like 19 or 20. He walks up and he's sort of looking at his phone, but he's also sort of keeps glancing up towards us. And he's standing just outside of our conversation area. So I've been around Jimmy a lot. Jimmy's fairly well known. You'll be in places with Jimmy and this will happen. And it's a little bit like, usually I just end up going, come on over here, just meet him. And then, you know, we can get on with our lives here. And so I motion to the kid and I'm like, yeah, hey man, what's going on? Come on over here. And he sort of comes over and I'm like, hey, how you doing? What are you doing? And he says, oh, I'm just looking for some people to sign some stuff. And I'm like, oh, well, here he is right here. And I push the professor towards him because he was sort of eyeing the professor and nobody knows who I am. And Jimmy's not there. So it's gotta be Brian. So I push him and the professor steps towards him and goes, hey, how you doing? What's your name? I'm Brian. And he reaches out his hand and the kid like tentatively grabs his hand and starts to shake it. And he goes, I don't know who you are.
Oh my gosh.
He gave you all the signs too.
He did. I was totally fooled. And I'm like, oh, I thought you said you wanted people to sign stuff. And he goes, yeah, like pros.
He is a pro. He's a professor, clearly.
Oh my gosh.
You should have seen
that. So I would have paid to see that.
Oh, I'm literally like crying laughing at this point. Like
I would have been on the floor. Oh my
gosh. Yeah, it was pretty insane.
And keep in mind that he was just like, when you're like, hey, what's going on? Oh, nothing. You know, that there was no indication. It was on his perspective, just a friendly stranger saying, hey, man, how you doing?
Yeah, no, exactly.
Fine.
Yeah, yeah,
come
yeah.
over here. Shake this guy's hand. Right.
It must have been like, this is weird. What? Whoa. Okay.
What is happening?
Uh-huh.
Phenomenal.
Right.
It was total misinterpretation from both sides. Yeah. It was.
Yeah.
But, you know, I will say that. In the professor's defense, like, if you go anywhere with him around there, like, he's the guy. Everybody knows who he is. Like, at our party gathering, everybody wanted to meet the professor. Like, we met a couple of kids, a couple of guys at the event, and we told them we were going to dinner with the professor, and they didn't want to come until they heard the professor was going to dinner. And they were like,
oh, please.
And then they were like, can we go to dinner? We really want to meet him. And we were like, sure. There was those two guys, Alex and Kyle, that we brought to Fogo de Chao that first night. And
I can only imagine what would happen if both you guys were walking around, because you guys are essentially the YouTubers of Magic.
I mean,
of Magic.
No one
knows me. That story you just said would be the exact same all day.
A lot of
what?
That's not
just
stop
possible.
With that.
You are the
come
face
on now,
of the Manosaurus.
Just knock it off.
Like, all
you know,
day.
Any idea how many people asked me, is Wedge here? Where's Wedge? Like,
I would say the over-under is like two. About
2,000.
2,000, yeah.
You know, you would have gotten quite a lot of attention.
I had people ask me that, and I have no real tie
Wait,
to you, Wedge. Yeah, but they saw, I'd be like, oh, you know, they knew we knew the professor, so they'd be like, is Wedge here? Is the Manosaurus here? And I'd be like, no, sorry, unfortunately. You know, and they'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, we told all of them that the Manosaurus thought he was too cool for GP Vegas.
Right.
Whoa,
right.
Whoa. Okay. Well, I gotta go. I gotta make like a campaign now.
Yeah.
Like hashtag Wedge is not too cool.
I actually told. Yeah, I told them that you were there and that you were just wait by that wall. He'll be coming by any minute. That's what I told every single person.
Right.
It was a busy
well,
wall
that
though.
Would
by the
be
end.
The actual worst.
unless he stands you up, you know. Unless he stands you up, but we're gonna tell him you're waiting on him.
Yeah, but we did
we'll
miss
give
you.
Give him a picture of you frowning and everything.
Right.
But what you did do something very significant while GP Vegas unfolded. We talked about the last couple episodes, and your fundraising with St. Jude's Charity, and you blew it away. Holy moly!
Yeah, unbelievable. What was the final number of the amount that you raised?
Thanks. Yeah, we raised, oh my gosh, $14,478 and I
Holy
think 18
crap.
Cents.
Wow.
In that's, 2 weeks. That, in 2 weeks.
That's about as how many people went to the GP Vegas. Like,
yeah, it's more. 15, it's 000. Unbelievable. Here we are, we're eating steaks and laughing about that, but you were actually like saving the lives of children. Like, literally. So,
if we talk about this too much, I'm going to like cry.
Oh, let's keep talking. Let's definitely keep talking then.
Yeah, we just keep
Great.
Going.
No, it was... It was amazing. We did the fundraiser because it's a Twitch, like it's a live stream fundraiser that St. Jude partners with them. And last summer's fundraiser was 2.5 months long, right? All summer. And we raised $11,900 over 2.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
This time around, 2 weeks.
Wow.
Went over that by 2,500.
Wow.
I mean,
unbelievable.
Like,
holy crap.
Community nailed it. I mean, absolutely went crazy. It was definitely, and we were talking like before, you know, we started recording, but it was the one thing that made it okay that I wasn't at GP Vegas. And like, I definitely can't stress that enough, that it was honestly the only other thing that I was happy doing, you know, if I wasn't in Vegas was that.
Oh yeah, totally.
Well, I mean, congratulations, first of all, that number is astounding in that amount of time. And you know, yeah, we joke, but I mean, there's a whole bunch of kids that are really happy you didn't go to Vegas. I mean, like, yeah, honestly, that's incredible. So
yeah, St. Jude's a wonderful,
if you put that money in someone else's hands in Vegas, you may never see it again.
Oh God, if it's in, don't put it in my hands.
Yeah,
I might double it. Probably not.
If you put that money into most Magic players' hands, they just buy into vintage.
Oh yeah, they would buy like half into vintage. They'd be like, I have a 2/3 of a deck ready to go.
Speaking of which,
here I come.
Yeah.
Did you tell them what Open Boosters donated for the charity stream?
Gosh.
That was so amazing.
That's right. You guys were raffling off some of those cards. Not raffling off. You were sort of doing a bid for some
of
this stuff, right?
Yeah, it was the pseudo charity auction. And there were a lot of YouTubers that got behind it. But
that's amazing.
Open Boosters, who, like, he's, you know, he went viral opening
the Black Lotus,
you know,
right?
Lotus in Trap Island. He sent a graded 9 beta Time Twister.
Wow.
Holy crap. Oh,
wow.
Which was, yeah, it ended up going for 1400.
That's great.
But the way the auctions work is like you donate and that's your bid, so you don't get it back. So it was like, it's like a risky kind of thing, but it ended up raising over 3000 total, like just that auction.
Oh, because of everyone's bids that were going in.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's
it was phenomenal.
That's unbelievable.
He you know what the worst part is? He trolled me so hard. When he released a video packaging it, and he's like, yeah, I'm sending you something between like $40 and $60 because that's what you asked for. Because it is. I'm like, you know, if you're going to send something,
right,
you know, make it, you know, kind of nice, but, you know, don't go crazy. And he's like, yeah, $40 to $60. So I open it. And before I see the card, there's this note. And he's like, the box was $40 to $60 when I bought it back in 1993. And I'm like, all right. So I looked at it and it's the beta. I thought it was going to be like a beta lightning bolt or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he sent it and it's there it is, the Time Twister. And I've just jaw dropped. I've never been trolled that hard in my whole life.
That's a pretty good troll. I'd love to get trolled like that all the time.
Yeah, right. I'll get trolled like that every day.
Yeah, when I get trolled, it's usually people telling me they have no idea who I am.
You're the Scott Pilgrim guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely one of those times when the Magic community comes together and did something amazing. It definitely helps remind me that, you know, among all the negativity, you know, you can come together and do something that's on it, like, objectively good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like no who's on the side rooting against St. Jude, right?
So, yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. There are no pros criticizing you for your choice to not go to Vegas and raise money. But we'll talk about that. Actually, maybe we'll just talk about it now. Tarmogoyf?
Foila Goyf?
Goyf Gate?
I believe the technical term is Goyf Gate.
I saw a lot of people arguing for Tarmogate, which I thought was pretty good, too, because, you know,
Tarmogate.
Yeah.
Why do we have to attach gate to every scandal?
because Reddit attaches gate to every scandal.
Yeah,
so you
that's
have
true.
To.
And if I heard if you have 10 or more gates, you win the game as well.
Right.
We're almost there, then. We have to.
That is universally
be well
true.
Past that.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think of it? Let me just explain if people don't know. In the top 8 of GP Vegas,
the Magic side, I believe.
Yeah. One of the, because GP Vegas was split into 2, but anyway, in one of the top 8s, Pascal Maynard was in pack 2, pick 1. He was not in green.
He was playing a red-white equip double strike deck.
Yep, and he had a choice between a Burst Lightning and a foil Tarmogoyf, and he took the foil Tarmogoyf. And then what ensued was a great deal of
Hate, toxicity, negativity from
the professional Magic playing community. Guys like Huey Jensen, Owen Turtenwald,
Reed Duke.
A lot of people were really all over Pascal and his.
Someone tweeted. One of those guys tweeted at him like, "You sicken me."
Yeah, that was the tweet. You disgust me. Oh. I think it was Owen who was like, "You disgust me."
You're a disgrace.
You know what's funny?
You're a disgrace.
It's like things that my dad said to me growing up, and you know, you never want to hear that.
Oh my god!
I'm just kidding.
Wow.
Just kidding.
Just really hurting the mood today. Yeah. First the butterflies, and then this.
So, but well, you know what's funny is Jimmy and I were on the plane home when this sort of went down. We got back in the airport, and we of course turn on our phone and get on Twitter first thing because we're degenerates. And we see these comments and we're chuckling because I thought they were joking.
Yeah. I showed Josh something. I was like, wow, look at this. And Josh is like, wow, man, that's some pretty deep humor, you know, to say it that way without any like slash S for sarcasm or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And then a little bit later, Jimmy's like, I don't think they're being sarcastic.
Yeah.
And it turns out like they were being pretty dead serious. And yeah. I mean, anyway, then what happened is the counter backlash
of everyone almost everyone, including the pros that didn't say anything, we had like Cedric Phillips from SCG and stuff just contributing to the conversation, being like, you guys need to chill out.
Saying it to Huey and Reed Duke. Oh, yeah. And those guys.
It was one of the most universal siding of a group I've seen in a long time, and so fast.
Yeah, and then like a couple of days later, most of those guys sent out a tweet, and they're all retweeted by Channel Fireball, so I believe it was a by committee decision apologizing for their actions.
Oh, the timing of it felt like they got together and were like, we need to apologize.
Oh, yeah, they totally did.
So, the tweets were basically within, like, 5 minutes LSV was like dad pushing two kids forward and being like, yeah, my boys have something to say, and then smacking them on the shoulder a bit. It's just like, sorry I threw the pennies on the roof of your house, Mrs. Wilkerson. Sorry I smashed the gnome statue. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
Is there something you want to tell us about your childhood?
Yeah. We're here. Pretty specific. It's a safe place.
It's a very safe place. Those gnome statues, though, someone's going to come looking for them.
Okay, so let me just ask you guys each, you take the foil goif or you take the burst lightning?
I take the foil goif.
Foil goif because money is money.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, for one, it's
worth more than first prize at this point.
It's like the two words foil goif were probably the most said throughout the entire weekend at the GP. Yeah. Not even in regards to the incident, just because people were like, oh yeah, I heard someone open the foil goif. We're like, man, where's my foil goif? Like jokingly, like I said on a Reddit post that it may as well be an Urban Dictionary entry. Foil goif. Like, this is term that we all use when we're playing Magic. And so when I saw him take it, I was like fist pumping in the air. I was like, that's awesome. That's so cool. Like, I totally would have done the same thing. It's a piece of Magic history. The whole hashtag from the weekend was make Magic history. And Pascal Maynard definitely did one way or the other, if he took it or just passed it.
Well, and I mean, sort of the capper to the whole story is that he decides to eBay the thing.
Yeah, with
and,
the deck.
Giving half of the proceeds to charity. And what was the final tally on what it...
Right now, I think we're up around 16,000. I don't think it's ended yet.
16,000.
Wow. And even if some of those
in your face, Huey Jensen and the rest of those guys, like, holy crap.
What he's going to get is more than the entire prize payout of the top eight, which is insane.
Well, and here's guy... Also, I think this wasn't talked about enough, but Craig Wesco came out and said that he had talked to Pascal... either earlier that weekend or maybe before. And here's a guy who's close to making platinum. He's close to getting enough points to go to Worlds. Mm-hmm. And he was going to have to skip some GPs coming up because he just didn't have the money to travel to these GPs and things. And so here's a guy who financially, I mean, skill-wise in Magic, he has it. But financially, it's just hard for him to get to the places he needs to get to play in the tournaments to get to that level. And so in that case, taking the foil goif totally makes sense because it's guaranteed money over possible money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And like the percentage increase of how much more he may have won with that burst lightning was to him
negligible.
I guess,
what do
that
you think?
Point.
That's an interesting question. I was having this conversation with BDM on Twitter. What do you guys think that if he takes the burst lightning instead of the foil goif, how much better is his deck? How much better chance does he have to win the whole thing?
1%.
From what I saw on Twitter, everyone doing the math about it, there were a few pros doing the math, mm-hmm. and the word negligible just kept coming up over and over again. Like, even if he took the burst lightning, it would have changed virtually nothing in the long run.
Yeah, the conversation I was having with BDM was saying he thought that the burst lightning was probably worth a full win over the course of an entire draft. John Finkel said he thought it was worth virtually... It was negligible. It probably didn't matter at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now I'm not, people who know me know I am not Mr. Limited, Mr. Draft. And there's going to be a video proving this where I make the worst pick as my first pick on an upcoming video. So that can be verified. So let me ask you, those of you more wiser than I, isn't picking the Tarmogoyf a valid move in the sense of preventing another from getting that card? I understand that obviously Goyf in Limited is nowhere near what it is in, you know, Modern, etc. But surely it's a pretty good two drop in Limited. It's, yes. I mean, isn't he preventing? If the burst lightning is negligible, isn't preventing a possible opponent from receiving a Goyf at least negligible, if not negligible times two? It's funny is it considered that much trash in Limited? Is it really trash?
It kind of is. It's not very good. It's
really?
Yeah. Wow. It'd be one thing if it was like, say, Comet Storm power level wise, which is just unbelievably powerful.
The best card in the format.
Yeah, exactly. And well, let's say that Tarmogoyf was that power level.
Right, okay.
Then you could make the argument maybe that its value plus hate drafting is worth something, but Tarmogoyf is really, it wouldn't even make a lot of decks, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and the thing is, like, at that point, you're in the second pack, it's the first pick out of the pack. If you didn't have any other viable options for your colors or what you were playing, then sure, taking that could be a viable thing, just to be like, this is a relatively powerful card, I don't want someone else to have it. But in this case, he did have another option which would fit into what he was making so much more that most people that play Limited would say that it's almost always better to take the card that's better for your deck, because the chance of you even seeing that card across the table from you is even more negligible than that card that you drafted being in your deck popping into your hand.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the only situation for that would be either, I mean, Comet Storm was in his color, so I guess it would be something like a Profane Command.
Yeah.
Like if that was the card, that is probably one of the, because there are a few cards at the very top that you always hate. There are just some of those cards, right, in every format that you always hate.
I think even then, though, you know, there's, I wouldn't even, not in pack one, pick one, because.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, because the chance that you play the person that has that card is very slim. And then even if you do, the chance that they draw it against you is not super high. So those combined don't make hate drafting really worth it early on in a pack, generally.
So is there an irony here that the most powerful card in Modern, what many people have, especially since this weekend, referred to as the Black Lotus of Modern, Tarmogoyf, that this card is virtually worthless at the Modern Masters GP, that things have been so skewed in terms of what the GP and the set are about, that the most powerful card in Modern is not a pick by any stretch of the imagination for most players in a pack? Isn't that a little strange?
It is a little
strange. There's something weird about that, right?
Because it's a reprint set, people will pick it just because it pays for their trip, it pays for their entry, you know, like.
But that's the whole issue, is everyone says he shouldn't have picked it.
Right, because he was playing for, you know, for the GP Top 8, for pro points, for all these other things that, as a pro, that's what they felt that he should not have been prioritizing, what I guess they must have saw as a filthy casual pick of something just for money.
Ooh, that's such a hateful sentiment, filthy casual. I mean, isn't the beautiful thing about the Magic Pro Circuit that we're all on equal footing, that everyone there is beginning and ending with the same potential?
Yeah,
he asks. He wow. asks with a leading question.
Yeah, wow, that sounds
the misconception.
No, but I mean, that's what I mean. The idea it's like, oh yeah, you kids can show up and draft and pick your foil Tarmogoyfs, but it's really this little crowd of people that are the real players here. I find to be quite a poor sportsmanship, if nothing else. Spirit.
That's why those tweets were so bad. It's just because it really showed that, like, it's like, how out of touch can you be? You were that player at one point. I mean, we all were that player. At one point, we all can be, and we all still might be that player at one point. The one that was like, oh my gosh, this card is worth money, or oh my gosh, this card is so like epic to me that I want to pick it, because the kid in me, the one that loves Magic from an innocent standpoint that's not all about winning and pro points and stuff, just wants to take it. You know, it felt like someone that was like so scarred by their childhood that they like wag their finger at anyone that, you know, may find joy in the game anymore.
I fear the problem is not that they are scarred by their childhood, but by they've been scarred by the pro experience. That the way in which this is set up and the way in which they have to interact with Magic the Gathering as pros is what is actually the damaging factor here. And when you hear about things like, you know, especially the financial burden, should a pro Magic player be having financial burden to attend GPs? Maybe they just need to pay these guys more. Should a foil Tarmogoyf be something that is an overwhelming temptation? Should it be worth more than first prize? If I'm a kid who shows up to just have fun and I play a side event and I crack a foil Tarmogoyf, should that be worth more than first prize at the GP? I mean, I guess the reason this one is worth so much is it's inflated, but you get my drift, which is that maybe they need to pay these pros more. It sounds like they work pretty darn hard and they you know, like are sleep deprived and stressed, and my God, give them some money.
Yeah, that's definitely a whole other issue that wasn't, I definitely remember when the conversation got going for a few days, that started coming up, And it's almost like a lot of pros were getting upset talking about how, like, this is the elephant in the room.
Right.
This is what we need to talk about. Wizards isn't paying us.
I make more as an adjunct professor, and that's nothing, man, because Taco Bell makes more than me. And when I hear about these prizes,
wait,
it's
all
like,
of Taco Bell makes more than you? That's
that's not hard. Taco Bell's great.
No, but I mean, seriously, like that was when I returned to Magic and heard about the big pro scene. I was like, wow, cool. What's, you know, like the first prize that these events win?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not that much when you compare it to everything else.
Yeah,
it's
certainly.
Know? I mean, pay these pros more. They work for it. No one's denying that.
I'd say the majority of pros still have second jobs.
Listen, none of them are pros.
Yeah.
No,
by the actual definition of the word.
There's probably not a single one that's a professional Magic player. It's cute to call them that, but
right.
I don't know that there's one that makes the bulk of their living from... Look at the lifetime earnings of the biggest guys, which is like Kai Buda and John Finkel. LSV's probably up there. It's around $350,000
for
the top two.
Oh, yeah, still like low six figures.
They've been playing for 15 years.
Yeah.
It's $20,000 average per year, maybe. That's for the best four guys.
That's not just sad. That's insulting.
Well, it's
that's rotten. Like, people should be more. I mean, like, and I'm not a pro guy. You know, I don't follow it that closely and everything. But I that isn't right, because there's so much money being made by everyone else involved, the vendors and the company itself. This is very lucrative. Like, and if the Pro Tour is so integral, as recent articles on Magic indicate that that's a big part of Magic's success, mm-hmm. then you need to pay these people a little bit more.
Yeah, that's definitely the sentiment that got sort of just clear, like pointed at directly from this whole event. It's interesting how many things this event has just brought up. Just one single Tarmogoyf, because that is the card that defines Modern Masters 1 and 2.
Yep.
It's the reason that this
set exists.
The
whole format of Modern.
Yeah, because that card was so prohibitively hard to get. And now it's like it's come full circle. It's really interesting. And I think as Magic grows, this issue will be one of the first that it has to be on top, high on the list of things that they should be looking at. I mean, at least I hope so.
Yeah, I will just say that if the pros are asking for more money to be thrown in, be careful what you ask for. Because right now, and I'm trying to insult them, but as soon as you put more money in, you're going to bring a lot more people in chasing that money.
Yeah.
And, you know, when the talent pool is shallow because the prizes are not there, the prize structure is not there. And we see this, we've seen this in other games for sure, where, you know, be careful, Huey Jensen, John Finkel, all those guys. You ask for a lot more money to be put in, all of a sudden, people who wouldn't have been playing Magic because it's not worth their time are going to be coming into that, coming in and fighting for that cash. And I don't know.
Spikes will emerge.
Well, we'll see. Like, it's like we say in the United States, like, if soccer was the biggest sport here, then LeBron James would probably be the best, you know, goalkeeper in the history of soccer, because he would have played that since he was a kid, not basketball.
Right.
Right.
You know, so yeah, there's this. I mean, I think Wizards should definitely subsidize it. I mean, Riot does it for League of Legends. You know, Blizzard just does it for Hearthstone. If Magic wants to keep up, they need to do that. They need to subsidize the prize structure, because $4,000 for the winner of the biggest Magic tournament in the history of the planet it's
insubstantial.
It's nothing.
Yeah, that's
it's nothing.
Joke. That's a joke.
We talked to our friends at Riot, and they were just laughing. They're like, what?
Yeah.
They were like, that's the prize? Like, it's insane. They give away $1 million.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not even, it makes it like it's not even in the same league, not even three leagues down from the big stuff, you know?
Well, I think that definitely brings up another point, which, man, I've been yelling about forever, and that the way Wizards does business, especially with their tournament scene, is archaic almost, like extremely old school. They're not keeping up with other, even just card games in general, let alone, you know, esports or anything like that. They're just so far behind. And what I'm afraid of, I love the idea of, you know, increasing tournament prizes. But I feel like if the second they do that, they're just going to inflate the price of entry again.
Oh,
that's the first thing I expect.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the the positive thing to find out through all of this is that Wizards has proven themselves to be a company that sees what's wrong and at least actively knows that they need to address certain areas. And, you know, like, make the right play is the motto of playing, you know, this game well and competitively. And I hope that the company that I grew up with, now owned by a bigger company, is able to find that light and at least keep it up. Because it's true. I mean, the competition around them with, like, all the other competitive games in esports rising up is only a good thing, because it just forces them to do better. That makes sense. So hopefully. I think we're on the edge of that. Tarmo Gate, Goyf Gate may be the beginning. It could be our Egyptian spring for Magic the Gathering. Who knows?
Now let me ask you folks a question, because here's another thing I've been thinking a lot about since this Goyf Gate is, perhaps if things like having a higher pay for pros is not going to be implemented, what about changing the way in which this circuit is run? I mean, the idea of going to a different state, a different part of the state, a different, you know, traveling all over, playing, you know, from morning until night for 3 days in a row sort of thing, scurrying to earn these buys, it's intensely stressful. A lot of times when there are play mistakes that on Reddit people erupt into, this pro player was cheating, there's lots of comments of saying, no, she was exhausted, he was exhausted, mm-hmm. it was day, you know, whatever, and they've been up without sleep, and I'm thinking, like, geez, take a break, take a day off, let these people sleep, you know, that's not, I don't think that I want to see my pros sleep deprived, I don't think I want to see my pros starving to death on the, like, imagine if, let's see a basketball game where they have only had 3 hours sleep and have eaten ramen noodles, you know, in the last 24 hours, but that's a lot of these pro players. And I think that sounds horrible for these poor folks, you know, like give them some rest and feed them some raw fish and brain food and let them, you know, come in and do a good game, maybe not make so many rounds, like figure out a way. I know there's a lot of people involved, but surely this can be restructured in a way where it's a much more relaxed sort of system, where maybe it's regionals and states and you only travel within your own state, and once you get past that point, the select best then might be flown by Wizards to a comfortable location, you know, to play in their region and then for the nation. I don't know. I'm not a sports guy. I don't even follow the pro stuff that much, but when I do hear about what these people go through, it just sounds like such intense, stressful conditions that why don't they just revise that? Because if he's saying, I couldn't afford, I almost had platinum, but I couldn't afford to go to other GPs, well, maybe if he didn't have to worry about that, maybe if it was just like, oh, well, I'll just go to the GPs in my area, and that's how the system is set up, and I'll become state champ, and once I become state champ, they'll fly me around or something. I don't know. I mean, like, is that a possibility?
I definitely think there is a lot of restructuring that can and should probably happen. I mean, Josh is the bigger sports guy here. I don't really know.
It's a cost-benefit analysis thing. I think if you're Wizards right now, and I don't blame them, you're looking at it and going, why? What do we get if we do all that stuff that you're talking about?
Yeah.
You know, and does
no more Goyf Gates.
But that doesn't matter. Does that hurt the game? I don't think.
Yes, I think this has been bad.
See,
for
I don't
the game.
Think it does.
I don't think it hurt the game at all.
I think they did splendidly well this weekend, and they're not going to hurt at all from it.
Well,
I think short term, but what about long term?
Well, what do you mean? I mean, Goyf Gate being the fact that the guy picked a foil Goyf. All the casuals, that 99% of the people that play your game are not spiky tournament professional Magic player hopefuls. And those people were all on the side of pick the Goyf because they play the game for fun.
Right.
And most people don't have any aspirations to be a Magic pro because, honestly, with the amount of work that you have to put in and the amount of money that you get at the other end, like, you could do almost anything else and be better off financially.
But that's the problem. Okay.
But it's not a problem because your game is still popular because it's not meant to be a profession.
You want people to dream of being pro. You want people to feel that they can do that pro circuit.
Do you?
But they don't push that at all.
Let's look
not
at
nearly as much.
Let's look at football. How many people watch football in this country? It's millions and millions. It's by far the most popular sport. Most of the people watching football are too old to play, never played in high school, never played in college, aren't trying at any point in their life to become a professional football player. Now, they would dream of the money and the fame of it, but they're not actually in any way rationally thinking they might someday be a football player. They watch it because they love watching that game. And you can you can consume Magic on that level and never want to be a professional and still have a professional scene. My point is just that, what does Wizards get that they're not getting now if they put all that effort into it and all that much more money into it? I don't know that it's probably worth it on the other end for them. Now, it'd be nice for us, obviously. It'd be nice for the pros, you know. But in the end, as a business, if you're going to put a bunch of money in and you don't know what you're really going to get out of it, why would you do that? And wouldn't it be better for us if they just hired a bunch more people, released more product every year or something, did something else?
Oh, no, I think they should release less product personally, but...
Okay, but you get my point. If they took that and put it into the actual game.
Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know that it needs to go into the game in that the game is cardboard and they've got that down except for the foils and now the packaging. But
went backwards.
Like put it into Magic Online, perhaps.
There you go.
But,
there you go.
You know, like hire, I'm guessing, an intern from college in programming who could do a much better job than what they currently have. But, you know, this is the thing. So recently, and I believe this was largely the thesis of that Vice article, was that the reason why they kept asking the question, why has Magic endured while other collectible systems, be it Beanie Babies or other card games, including baseball cards,
Beanie Babies the Gathering?
Beanie Babies the Gathering. I was always wanting a Dungeons and Dragons themed set, but if we do a Beanie Babies themed set, watch out.
I'm so game.
God, yeah. I would love a Dungeons and Dragons themed Magic set.
They could do it. They own both properties.
Yeah.
I know, but they don't want to mix the IP. The thesis of that piece was that the reason it endured was creating the pro scene and creating formats like Standard, where you had to buy into the new cards in hopes of, you know, the pro scene. And I think that they had a good point about that. I think that if Wizards of the Coast were to say, we're not doing the pro circuit at all, it would hurt the company, because I think that this is actually a big factor in their success.
Oh,
and
I'm not...
therefore having a healthy, thriving pro scene is good for the company. And this is not, it's not healthy to have people expected to live like this. It's not healthy having things where there's any kind of scandal where it's like, well, he's getting paid more by taking the foil card than he would have for winning, so why shouldn't he? And then when this happens again and again and again, and it gets, you know, it starts combining, when it turns into the whole thing is a sham and people start tuning out, then isn't that the same as we don't have a pro circuit at all? And if just abandoning the pro scene entirely now is a bad thing, then the pro scene deteriorating to that point is similarly negative, I feel. And I am not a pro fan. I don't even watch the damn stuff. But I do feel that having a healthy pro environment is good for the game overall and long-term stability. Short-term, sure, you're getting some headlines and stuff. Long-term, stable is good, in my most humble and English major opinion.
I don't know why being an English major makes you
it's
less.
Because we're worthless.
Here's the truth.
If everybody in the medical industry went on strike tomorrow, the nation would grind to a halt. If everybody in plumbing or mechanics or computer programming went on strike tomorrow, the nation would grind to a halt. If everyone who's an English major went on strike tomorrow, you wouldn't notice for 10 years.
Hey, wait, listen, we had a writer's strike here in LA a few years back, and the town did feel it.
Yeah,
so
if you guys ever watch the show like Friday Night Lights, oh my God.
Yeah, how do you feel the writers came out on that? You think they won that?
No.
Because no one cares.
Nobody. The studio always wins, because the man always wins, unfortunately.
Right. They wanted, what, like a penny for syndication on DVDs or something like that? No!
Okay.
Not a chance.
Well, let's move on here a little bit. We wanted to talk about the Rolling Stones article. And this is similar lines. I feel like there was that Vice documentary really recently. The Stones article came out. Jimmy featured, mentioned
yeah,
in the
Stones
article.
I had no idea the guy was playing next to me.
You
I
live
guess,
a charmed life, dude.
When I saw my name in there, I was like, whoa, what the heck?
You live a charmed life.
I was
life.
Playing
There's
next
7,200 people there.
Yes, that's
he happens
right.
to
the
sit
Jimmy
next
Wong.
To you.
I do have a I'm a Luxac, I guess, whatever the right terminology is for that.
So, I mean, it feels like the game, and then there was the South Park episode. Yes. Also,
this
so,
is all this year.
Huge.
Yeah,
I mean, in
huge.
The last 12 months, the amount of like cultural awareness about Magic, it feels like it's really skyrocketed.
Yeah,
it has
in a really great way too, because it's not it's not in the 90s where it's like, oh, you guys are associated with witchcraft and all this stuff. Now the game is associated with anything, you know, like Hearthstone and League of Legends and all these other big games, World of Warcraft, EverQuest. We've seen the progression happen, and now we're finally at the point where it's just normal. It's a normal, fun thing that a lot of people do, and it's big, which is cool. Wasn't like that before.
I think that a lot of this ties into the rise of what we'll call nerd culture, and how back in, for those of us that remember the 80s and 90s, this was something that was looked down upon. And then when we all grew up and became successful in varying degrees, especially those of us, not myself, who did computer programming and started making a lot of money. And started making a lot of money and shaping, you know, the zeitgeist, as I'm sure folks in quote unquote the biz call it. Then all of a sudden, now on TV, the nerd is suddenly always a software millionaire, and they might still be socially awkward, but everyone's still interested in them because they're rich. And so what's happening? And then movies like The Avengers, which is is number one at the box office and everything. It's like, oh, these nerds know what they're talking about. Hey, nerds, can you show me some more comics like this? Well, gladly, friend. You know, and it's like, so it's actually become a positive thing. And then they look at Magic the Gathering, which is a successful business. They're making a lot of money. People who play it and collect it and know what they're doing are having a lot of fun, and many of them are making a lot of money, collectors. And so it's turning into a look at what the nerds are doing over there, not in a derogatory way, but in a look, what have they got there? They've got something good. You know, they know what to pick out. And it's like, look at this, is how I feel. And so with Magic the Gathering, it's like, oh yeah, I saw people play that in high school maybe, and I always wondered about it, but it was nerdy and I stayed away from it. And now it's like, oh, cool, maybe that's fun. I'd like to go have some fun. Oh, cool, the people who are making a lot of money are doing it. I'd like to make a lot of money. Oh, cool, you know, like, this is something that we're drawn towards. And so Magic the Gathering is in Rolling Stone. And how awesome that, like, you know, Christine Sprankle is like our mascot or our emblem or our face or everything with that
she
great
is our
Las Vegas
Abbotson,
pick.
If anything.
She
I'll
is
take that,
our,
man. Jeez.
And it's just like, she at one point, you know, the larger mainstream society might have laughed at the goofiness of cosplay. And because of her and people like her, and I don't mean to push out the other cosplayers there who are all great, but she's kind of like the big name in cosplay and Magic right now. And there was lots of cosplayers and they all did a great job, really great job. But like, now that's cool. Now cosplay is cool. And now like, people looking at that photo aren't like, look at the people dressing up, dorks. It's like, wow, she's cool. These people are cool. They can just walk up and talk to this cool girl and everything like that. It just embodies all that we had been denied. It's just great. It's Rolling Stone, man. It's awesome. And it's just a great time to be a part of this. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's definitely geek culture in general. Like BJ Shea's Geek Nation, that's the name of a show, has the word in it. You know, like shows like Tabletop on Geek and Sundry. Again,
right.
Again, geek keeps popping up. It's something that, I mean, the Big Bang Theory.
Yeah,
just like one. Pop culture has embrace this in a way with the revival of the comic book movie and everything, in a way that it's all of a sudden finally just come around where, you know, in the early 90s it was about grunge rock and being real and all this, you know, from the streets and stuff, and how, you know, sort of rough and tumble was more admired than sit in your dad's living room and play a card game or whatever. But it's finally come around, and it is very interesting to see it finally happen.
Let's not discount guys like you, Wedge, and you, Prof, and people that get out there on YouTube and have sort of, you know, dispelled what traditional media says people look like and how they act and what they think,
right,
is what they think is cool and what they consume. And, you know, geek culture has really sort of been empowered in the last decade or so to come out and be like, no, I like this thing.
Yeah.
I don't
yeah.
care if you think it's nerdy. It used to be where you would hide it. You know, and you wouldn't talk about it in places where other people might hear you. And
yeah.
now a few people started doing it at some point. I don't remember when. And now everybody does it. And you get 10,000 Magic players in Las Vegas. And they're like, yeah, we play Magic and we think it's awesome.
Yeah.
And we don't care if other people point at us and say that you're geeks or you're nerds. And you know what happens when you do that? People don't point at you and say you're geeks or nerds because you think it's cool and you're proud of it.
Yeah. So, it's the confidence that comes with it.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, guys like you, a lot of people in this community that create content and just frankly for other games that have just come out and been who they are really what's powering this sort of revolution.
It's also sort of, it came with the rise of the individual on the internet, and the internet in general is, I think, the reason that this is all here is because finally, like, your weird one thing, maybe not weird, of course, let's say you like this one very specific thing, one character from this one cartoon from the 90s. You were the only one in your entire town that knew about it. Not until the internet came around. Now you have a whole forum, a group of people, and you're allowed to take claim and like say, like, look, I do like this. There are other people that do it. It's affirming my thing in this. And the community...
Yeah, I'm not weird. I'm not geeky.
The internet made everyone that was considered a nerd or whatever growing up realize that, like, oh, wait, there are millions of other people that are in the exact same boat as me. And we have confidence now because we realize that we are not the minority by any means.
Yeah. Oh my God, that's so well put. That's it exactly. And it's a beautiful thing. What a beautiful time to be alive in that sense. I just read a tweet today from Erin Campbell where she just said, like, because of the Magic community, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but she said, because of the Magic community, I have the type of love and acceptance that I only dreamed of in high school. And that's it exactly, is because of the internet, we no longer have to only receive information in a one-way system. Television, newspapers, books, it's one way. The message comes to us and we can't talk back. Anyone with an internet connection can send a message, whether it's a post on a bulletin board system, a YouTube video, what have you, a blog, an email. We can send as well as receive and find that we're not alone. You know, this idea of the geek used to be the freak, and now it's just love. Geek and nerd means I love something deeply and passionately, whether it's Magic cards or baseball. You'd be a sports nerd now.
Yep.
Sports nerd. Yeah. And it just means this is something that I love. And that's why people are drawn to it. Because I think in a lot of people's day-to-day lives, you know, especially with some of this miserable economy we have and some of these miserable jobs, you know, it just feels like, God, I just wish I could feel passionately about something. And being a nerd or being a geek means I feel passionately about whatever it is I'm a nerd or geek about. And that's why we're in Rolling Stone, baby.
That is pretty sweet. We have made it to Vice and Rolling Stone.
Yeah.
All right. We haven't heard from Wedge in a while. Sorry, Wedge. I want to ask you a direct question, though. Are you still there?
Oh, yeah. No, you guys are just nailing it. There was nothing.
It'd be hilarious if there was just dead silence. I'm like, is he there? It's just like, Wedge, are you there? No, he got disconnected like 20
Wedge
minutes
is like,
ago.
Guys, I just blew up the Death Star over here. I'm back.
I speak when I feel like I need to speak. And you guys were nailing it. You guys were saying,
we speak because
I just drafted a foil goyfoil. You guys were
blowing. Yeah, like, guys, I'm on Midgar right now. And I just, right. I mean, I foil goyfoil.
I've essentially gone infinite.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask.
Yes,
that's why I wanted to ask you, Wedge. Have you had a chance to play much of the new modern Masters 2015 draft format?
Yes, a outrageously ridiculous amount.
Oh, awesome!
Whenever a new set comes out, I have an arrangement with a store where I'll just draft over and over again and just give them all the cards.
Dude.
So I drafted in person like 30 something times now.
30 something
at least. Online at least 15 or 20. It's,
okay, this is great because my question...
It's for the channel.
Yeah, totally.
It's for the channel.
Sure, yeah, it's market research.
Okay, can you share the knowledge... Okay, what do you think are... Well, let's start with this. Draft archetype. If you could pick one, if at the start of the draft you could say, I'm going to be in this archetype, and you knew it was going to happen, what would you choose?
White Blue Artifacts.
Affinity, huh?
Yep,
you know,
not
I've
close.
Been, I've been seeing
not
a lot
even
of people
close.
Draft
you didn't even hesitate.
And it is... incredibly
what's the
resilient.
Most important card in that deck, Wedge?
I mean the most bonkers card is Cranial Plating.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
It's just an absolute house.
Is that the card that if you see it pick one you grab it and be like, I'm Affinity,
you
baby?
Force that.
Yeah,
unless there's some crazy rare in that pack. Cranial Plating is absolutely a card that can push you
into
it's not the only one. There are cards like Lodestone Mirror is the same way. There are a lot of people that'll get Lodestone Mer, and they're just like, we're all in, boys.
Well, here we go.
Glinhawk Idol is one of those cards, too, even.
Oh, Glinhawk is... like that's the thing. The individual card quality in the artifact deck, I think, is just better on average than any other archetype.
Right, and I think Glinhawk, if it comes...
Glinhawk really surprised me, because when I first saw that card, I was like, eh, not that good. But then when you play against it, you're like... I can't do anything.
Value, man. It's value.
I can't do anything about it. All my removal doesn't hit it because it's not a creature on my turn.
Yeah,
that thing's brutal. Okay, what are maybe two other archetypes you think are also very strong?
I think the Graft deck is underrated.
Oh.
I think blue-green Graft, because if it's one of those decks that really punishes lack of removal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
In a big way, Modern Masters 2015 is about going wide, right? Like when you're attacking, at least most of the time, unless someone gets like Savage Twister and just hoses you. But most of the time, it's about going wide. And if left unchecked, I can't think of a deck that can get more ridiculous than a Graft counter deck. That deck is dumb. Maybe Domain if you have like the perfect draws, but Graft is so underrated. And what I found watching a lot of the GPs is there were a few people that kind of went into it, but then turned to like just a blue-green tempo thing. But I think it's overlooked a lot.
Legit.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I really like it as a draft. Like it, and it's one of those decks that's pretty easy to tell if it's open.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When you're drafting, you have a card like the Graft Mage. It's like 4 mana, and you can untap like creatures that have 1/1 counters on them. That if that's still there in like the middle of a pack. Or, like, I guess the middle to, like, the latter end of the pack. Graft is open. Like, it's got to be. Like, go nuts. It's definitely one of those. I think it's super underrated. Other than that, I got to say, besides artifacts, you can kind of go crazy with Bloodthirst, I guess. Really? I've seen a few Bloodthirst strategies that, if drafted well, have that crazy... I forgot the name of it. It's that triple red 7/2 with persist.
Thunderblast.
Yeah.
Ooh, like
that
like
thing is brutal. Cards,
it is ridiculous. That deck is also, I think, underrated.
Yeah, just you've got Scargan Firebird and stuff too. Comes out as a 6/6.
Yeah, like turn 1 Vampire Lacerator into turn 2 Stormblood Berserker is like, who fights that?
Yeah, how do you
fight that? But that's also a deck I really like. But overall, I would say, I don't know. I just really like blue, man. Like, even besides my bias to blue has some crazy spells in this format.
Yeah, I think Vapor Snag is an all-star that people don't realize. Just
Repeal
it's just
is really
all,
good.
Repeal and Vapor Repeal. Snag are always good.
My, don't even get... like
I would repeal all day, every day.
Yeah.
Draw I go blue in the face talking about unsummoned spells and how their pseudo-time walks. Especially in this kind of format. Yeah. People are tapping out all the time to do things.
Yeah, it's very tempo-based.
It's yeah, exactly. And having an unsummon effect is sometimes just as good as taking an extra turn, which is also what I found. So yeah, no, going wide is the thing. Artifacts, I think, is by far the best strategy.
Well, Wedge, we have boxes and we will save one.
Oh yes.
Yeah. My last question for you, Wedge, is when are we gonna hang out?
Yeah, man.
Oh my.
Meet up in San Francisco. Meet up in San Francisco. Meet up in San Francisco.
I have been promised the best oysters that I've ever tasted if I go to San
oysters
Francisco.
Oysters and prosciutto, hog and rocks in San Francisco. Any listeners that live in the Bay Area that like oysters and or prosciutto, hog and rocks. Mm-mm-mm. It is not cheap, but it is delicious.
I have been promised that place if I go up there, Wedge, and I'm assuming if you're there too, then we all get it.
Oh, so I actually pay for everybody now. All right, deal.
Oh,
deal.
Wait.
Then
it's
pay,
on me.
Prof.
It's on me. You three.
Then you
come
owe me. Wait.
Here.
Whoa. You owe me two dinners then.
Ooh.
Because
whoa.
Wait. Here's why.
Listen
no,
to
no,
this
no,
guy.
No. Listen.
Guy.
I want to hear the story.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Tell the story.
When we first started, like really talking and becoming friends, and I was like, yeah, man, you know, eventually I'm gonna get out there and it's gonna be awesome. And then you said, when you come out here, I will buy you a steak dinner. That's just word for word. That's what you said. And I remember that when people offer to buy me steak dinners.
Now,
for the record, I also have heard that.
I buy you dinner and I said, what do you like? And you said steak. And I happen to know a really good steak place where they do age the steak in house and everything. And so I said, no problem. I'll buy you a steak dinner. But that was based upon your own criteria. You selected from the drop down box
steak dinner. And everything else went out the window.
You selected from the drop down box steak. Wedge,
drop down
come
box.
On out, Wedge. Wedge, yeah. my drop down box.
Were you doing it on a computer?
You
it sounded like
to
a
San
conversation.
Francisco, yeah. I will take care of you, man. I will buy every. Come on out to SF. Whoa. I'll take care of you.
He almost said every meal.
Did you just say
so short?
Sure.
Steak for breakfast.
You fly out here. I'll take care of you at the rest, man. And dude. San Francisco, you will play Magic 24/7. Name the format. Name what you want to do. There's always. I could walk
Wait
out the
minute.
Store
Wait
right now.
Wait a minute. Is it San Francisco or is it Valhalla? Because I think you're getting
confused.
Sounds
like some crazy.
The glory land.
It's the this best. I feel like... so sorry. I feel so sorry when I hear people say, yeah, we've got like one card store and they just do Friday Night Magic. And...
You realize we, Wedge and us, live in the biggest cities in the country, right?
Yeah. Like, how do you not always have magic have going more, on like we've got in the Bay Area? And out of
we
our
do.
17...
Yeah, we do. You know, we'll find the time to get us all out there. Until then, it's been a pleasure having the both of you on. Wedge, I very much look forward to the time we can draft this set together, or the next set, who knows? Maybe we'll see each
I'm
other.
I'm saving a box of Modern Masters 2015 just for whenever we hang out with you, Wedge, so...
Oh my god.
This what about my you. Box of Innistrad? I thought you were saving a box of Innistrad for me.
Hey, you know what? If all four of us get together, box of Innistrad and box of Modern Masters 2015.
Oh my god.
And then a
over
big
steak.
Box of steak.
If that is not incentive, I don't know what is.
Yeah,
dinner's on me if Innistrad's on you. I'm paying less in that situation.
I'm in the airport right now.
Excellent. Well, if you guys want to find both Wedge and the Professor online, you can. It's super easy. We'll have all the links below, of course. The Manosaurus on YouTube and on Twitter for Wedge. Professor, you are at Tellarian Community on YouTube and Tellarian College? I
at
always,
Twitter, yeah, no, that's
Tellarian
the confusing.
College
I'm
on Twitter.
Tellarian Community at YouTube. Yeah, well, they have these rules about how long your name can be. Tellarian Community on YouTube, Tellarian College on Twitter.
Hey, but you know what?
Test,
it is a test, and I aced it. I'm the only one that's
wow, you got evil
that.
There, yeah.
Yeah, I did get a little evil. Anyway, guys, thanks so much for coming on. I so look forward to the time when we can all hang out together, hopefully at some kind of convention coming up. Wedge, expect to see you there, buddy.
I know. We'll talk.
We'll start a new charity just for you to get your butt out here. Great.
Viewers tried to do that once. I had to tell them to stop.
Very respectable.
All right, fellas. Thanks for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And thanks, everybody, for listening.
You guys are the best. See you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.